WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Richmond's mayor and the governor intend to remove Confederate statues from Monument Avenue. They've been there for decades. Meanwhile, Charlottesville's Police Civilian Review Board will soon be able to get to work. And as Virginia gets set to move into phase two of relaxed coronavirus restrictions, how are shops in downtown Stanton responding? This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, June 4. Governor Ralph Northam is expected to announce plans today to remove one of the country's most iconic monuments to the Confederacy, a statue of General Robert E. Lee along Richmond's prominent Monument Avenue. A senior administration official told the Associated Press that Northam will direct the statue be moved off its massive pedestal and put into storage while his administration seeks input on a new location. The Lee statue is one of five Confederate monuments along Monument Avenue, a prestigious residential street and National Historic Landmark District. Also on Wednesday, Richmond Mayor LeVar Stoney said he would introduce a measure in City Council to remove all Confederate statues along the avenue. The monuments have been rallying points during protests in recent days over the police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. The statues have been tagged with graffiti, including messages that say, "End police brutality," and "Stop white supremacy." Hundreds of protesters were already gathered around the Robert E. Lee statue when they heard the news. One of them was Naomi Isaac. She wants to see more concrete action.
These symbolic acts do nothing to change our material conditions right now. And so I'm glad that they are taking down these monuments, but what are they doing in terms of funding the RPD and funding this racist police department that continues to enact violence against Black Americans?
Isaac is happy the monuments will finally come down, but she emphasized that much more needs to be done to change the social and economic conditions for Black residents, including removing police from public schools in Richmond. Charlottesville's Police Civilian Review Board will soon be able to get to work. On Monday, the Charlottesville City Council unanimously approved the appointment of Philip Shea, the final member to the Police Oversight Panel. The board's seven voting members were appointed in February, and officials had since been searching for an eighth member who was required to be a non-voting member with law enforcement experience. Work on the board began in 2017 as a way to improve trust between the police department and the community after the deadly white supremacist rally in Charlottesville in August that year. Democrats campaigned on the issue of criminal justice reform last year, but advocates say when they took power in Virginia's House and Senate, a lot of reform still got left behind. From Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope reports.
The issue of expunging criminal records for minor crimes has been popular with Democrats for many years. And so when Democrats won control of the House and Senate, lots of people were finally expecting to see some action on the issue. But House and Senate Democrats could not agree, and the issue was sent to a study committee. House Majority Leader Charnell Herring says she was concerned the Senate wanted to expunge convictions for alcohol and marijuana, but not prostitution convictions for victims of sex trafficking.
Those who are sex trafficked, they're telling them, you all, you need to wait, but these other crimes we're going to go ahead and expunge. And I did not think that was proper, but I do think that we're going to get expungement in Virginia. I expect it to happen next year. But I wanted to study it because I think there is a way that we can do this to be more comprehensive.
Senator Scott Surivel is a Democrat from Fairfax County who says proving someone was a victim of sex trafficking at the time when they were convicted of prostitution is much more complicated an issue, something he says is worth studying and doing, but he disagrees with the idea that expunging records for alcohol and marijuana convictions of people under the age of 21 should wait.
There are thousands of people out there that have dismissed charges following them around the rest of their life, and there's a lot of people that could benefit from doing something about it right now. Human trafficking piece affects a much smaller group of people. A lot of us saw the need to move fast on the alcohol and marijuana stuff.
When lawmakers return to Richmond next year, they may be facing much more public pressure to take action on criminal justice reform. I'm Michael Pope.
A facility in Rockingham County is the latest nursing care home to announce new cases of COVID-19. The nonprofit Sunnyside Retirement Community near Harrisonburg said Wednesday there are a total of five cases at the Pennell Healthcare Center on the Sunnyside campus. For now, the facility said that the Pennell Center is in full isolation with a no visitation policy and is following guidelines from the CDC and the Virginia Department of Health. Since the coronavirus pandemic began earlier this year, nursing homes and prisons around the country have seen massive outbreaks. Full disclosure, Sunnyside is an occasional sponsor of programming on WMRA. Well, this week marks the beginning of hurricane season. Meteorologists are already tracking the third storm of the year, which could impact parts of the U.S. next week. Organizations such as the Red Cross of Virginia are trying to help people prepare while facing new challenges brought on by the pandemic. Jonathan McNamara is the communications director for the Red Cross of Virginia.
COVID-19 has changed many aspects of how the Red Cross does business, including the types of information we put on our websites and social media channels. Encouraging people to include items like gloves, masks, and hand sanitizer will help slow the spread of the virus and help make sure that our communities are prepared.
The Red Cross has also revised their guidelines for how to plan for a disaster during the pandemic. That information and an updated emergency app is available at redcross.org. Finally, today, as Governor Northam continues to lift coronavirus-related restrictions on businesses, how are shops in downtown Stanton responding? WMRA's Mike Tripp has the story.
The streets of downtown Stanton still see foot traffic, but that traffic is lighter these days, the wake of COVID-19.
We were fortunate that downtown was definitely alive and doing well. When news of this hit, it was frightening as everyone in the world was facing it.
Greg Beam serves as the executive director of the Stanton Downtown Development Association.
There was just so many uncertainties. We weren't sure what to do or how to do it. And then several of our businesses, one by one, started to go offline and share with us that they were closing. And rapidly, that increased each day. And it definitely was that feeling of panic.
With the pandemic and state-ordered restrictions came hard decisions. Chip Clark is owner of 101 West Beverly, or simply the 101, a downtown eatery, and other properties in town, including the wine cellar.
In general, we felt the best option was to not operate. We were a small enough operation, we could contain the expenses by just shutting down the operation. We felt that that was our best strategy.
Beam says he's not aware of any permanent closures, but several businesses did close temporarily.
I think it's been great how many of our businesses quickly learned how to shift how they were operating, how they were reaching their customers, the services they were providing. Some folks quickly adapted and developed new websites and ways to sell their products online,
as well as curbside pickup.
Some of our restaurants figured out how can we deliver food differently? How can we reach our customers? I was really impressed with the folks that quickly pivoted to a new format and developed new ways to reach our supporters and customers of downtown.
Beam says even as most businesses are able to relax restrictions under Phase 2, for example, restaurants allowing patrons inside at 50% capacity, it'll still take a while to recover.
For me, I think it's going to be a long process. Gradually, we will see more businesses returning, but in different ways. The way they operate, the way they once again reach their customers and our downtown supporters. I feel more businesses are going to have to develop ways of being online.
Nikki Swatz, owner of Allure Salon, was ready for her business to make its return.
We had honestly no idea what was going to happen. At first, we thought we were only going to be off for like 30 days, and then we thought it was going to be June 10th, and then we thought it was going to be May 8th, so a lot of uncertainty.
Then Phase 1, which began May 15th under Governor Northam's orders.
It was good. It was a good feeling that we could reopen and get back to work.
As for their customers.
Well, they're all happy to see us, and they're glad that they're back in here, and we're glad to see them.
Haley Stewart leans back in her chair with eyes closed. The stylist runs a brush over her still damp hair.
Oh my gosh, feels amazing. It's been too long. I had been stuck in the house for too long and was ready to get out and just get life back to normal.
With Phase 1 came certain restrictions, in addition to the governor's order at the end of May, that masks be worn inside most businesses.
It's different. We can only have one client at a time, where most all of us double book all the time and are popping people in and out of the chair. And obviously it's different communicating with everybody with a face mask on and people not knowing that we're smiling.
How does Stewart feel about her mask?
I'm not against it in any way, I guess. I mean, I think it's a pretty simple thing to do. So if it's an order to do so, then I think it's pretty easy to comply.
Shane Hill walks along East Beverly Street, tugging at his mask while crossing New Street.
I don't like it. It's hot.
So why does he wear it?
I do it because I'm told to.
Observing foot traffic for a time, I noticed a mixture of those wearing masks and those not. Of the businesses, I saw a sign in the window at Fretwell Bay stating, masks recommended. While two doors down, Cameron Pallett had a sign stating, mask required. At Beverly Cigar Shop, patrons were coming and going without masks. Of course, it could be kind of hard to smoke a cigar while wearing a mask. Back to Shane. He says this is his first time out and back downtown.
It's different. Everything's still curbside, it seems.
You know, phase one, I don't think really changed anything in either direction for us.
The 101's Chip Clark.
You know, we don't let customers inside here, so they don't have access to our bathroom. They don't have access to seating in here. It's mostly to protect the staff so that they have a safe environment, both in the kitchen and in the front of the house, so we can provide food.
So what might help?
The plans that the city has coming up for opening up the Beverly Street block and allowing outdoor seating, that will probably have a significant impact.
Beginning this weekend, the city will close off Beverly Street in the downtown area to vehicular travel and allow outdoor dining areas from 5 p.m. Fridays until 9 p.m. Sundays. Mayor Carolyn Dole likes the concept.
I give all the credit to our recovery team, which includes a variety of city staff as well as local business owners. They've worked really hard to make this a safe opportunity for businesses to open in this next phase.
Our downtown still is here, and even if folks can't see us in person, I hope they'll still reach out.
The Stanton Downtown Development Association is also working to put hand sanitizer stations throughout the downtown area. For WMRA News, I'm Mike Tripp.
Full disclosure, Stanton Downtown Development Association occasionally underwrites programming on WMRA. You can learn more about that story at WMRA.org or on the app. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Thursday.